Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you may know, 1 week from tomorrow, large parts of the U.S. government could shut down, and we could experience the first ever default on the federal debt a few weeks after that. This is the latest form of obstruction brought to you by House Republicans in their fight to stop Obamacare. Joining us to explain what's going on and the unprecedented commitment to what he calls sabotage is New York Magazine columnist Jonathan Chait. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
So in your recent piece called The Republican Plot to Kill Obamacare, you write that Obamacare has come to fill the place in the conservative psyche once occupied by communism and later by taxes, the main point of doctrinal agreement, unquote. So what is it about Obamacare exactly that they are so passionately committed to destroying it?
I think a few things came together to cause this moment. Number one, you had the Republican Party understanding at the outset of Obama's term that it had a strong political incentive to oppose this law. Right? You had Mitch McConnell was very open about saying that if our fingerprints are on it, if we cooperate with this law, then it'll become popular and people will see this as a signal that it's okay. So they worked very hard to keep all the Republicans away from it. And there were a lot of Republicans who were negotiating around a proposal along these lines and all got pulled back by the Republican leadership. But this caused something else to happen, because when the Republicans were pulling other Republicans away from the negotiations for this bill, they were increasingly making stronger and stronger criticisms of it, not just, well, we're not sure about this law, or this may not be such a good idea. This is terrible. This is awful. This is the biggest disaster in American history. It got worse and worse and worse. And then the fact that all the Republicans were against it itself became more evidence in their mind of how awful and how terrible the law was. So in part, you had a kind of political dynamic where you had what was seen as the big signature initiative of the Obama administration, which would be a stand-in for whether Obama was a successful president or a failed president, which is an important question to both sides. That happened. Number two, the substance of the law is itself, aside from its symbolic resonance, the substance of the law is quite important. The law signifies the end of the United States' unique place among advanced countries as a place where health insurance is a kind of earned entitlement, something you can get or lose, or you need to get a good job to get, or you're in danger of losing in various cases, that it becomes something that everyone has a right to as kind of access. So that's a real important transformation of the role of government in society, which a number of conservatives find very troubling and very alarming.
So the latest headline that I'm sure our listeners have heard ad nauseum over the last 4 or 5 days is that the House passed a stopgap bill on Friday that would fund the government come October 1st, the new fiscal year, only if all spending for Obamacare is eliminated. Further detail for us, further this game of chicken down the road. And here's one of the most vocal Republicans on this fight, Senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, yesterday on Fox News Sunday.
I don't want the government to shut down. The American people don't want the government to shut down. And I don't think Harry Reid and President Obama should shut down the government. Listen, if that happens, if Harry Reid kills this bill in the Senate, I think the House should hold its ground and should begin passing smaller continuing resolutions one department at a time. It should start with a continuing resolution focused on the military. Fund the military, send it over. And let's see if Harry Reid is willing to shut down the military just because he wants to force Obamacare on the American people.
So obviously Ted Cruz is framing it as the ball being in Harry Reid and President Obama's court. And if the government shuts down, it will be their doing. But most people seem to think the Senate is going to pass a full budget that includes Obamacare and send it back to the House, and it'll be the Republican leadership to decide whether to shut down the government or not. What do you see as the possible resolutions, or the most likely, by October 1st?
I think the Republican leadership really wants to avoid a shutdown, and they're trying really hard to get away from it. Their plan was to pass this continuing resolution that defunded Obamacare so that the Senate could kill it, and then they could show the base that they tried and it's the Senate's fault, and what are you going to do? And now we have to keep the government open. I think that's what they're hoping to do. Now, whether they actually succeed is a completely different story, right? Because I think the history of the last 3 years shows that when John Boehner sets his mind to do something, he can do it maybe 49% of the time.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the advertising battle going on. The one getting lots of free airtime on the cable channels and online is the one set in a gynecologist's office with a woman on the examination table, and all of a sudden Uncle Sam pops up between her legs, and the text reads, "Don't let the government play doctor." And on the other side, the Obamacare supporters have enlisted people like pop star Katy Perry, who has tweeted to her gajillion followers that on October 1st, they can get health insurance because that's the day you can actually start signing up for Obamacare. Is this a fight on either side about winning over young people?
Yes, that's the point. Because to make the health insurance exchanges viable, to make them work, you need to get a mix of healthy people and sick people. If you get nothing but older, sicker people with very high medical needs, then the cost of the insurance premiums is going to rise. And that in turn will drive out anyone who's not extremely sick and extremely desperate for health insurance, and you'll go into what they call a death spiral. So to avoid a death spiral, you've got to get a stable balance between younger, healthier people and older people who have more sickness. So part of what conservatives are doing, aside from the immediate, you know, front and center confrontation in Congress, is to wage this battle to persuade young people to boycott the exchanges, to stay out. Some of them are saying it's not in your interest to go in. Some of them are trying to scare them with these, you know, frightening clowns and other advertising campaigns.
Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine on the latest in the battle over Obamacare and the federal budget and possible government shutdown when that budget would kick in a week from tomorrow. Of course, the price of insurance policies and the financial death spiral that you were talking about, the price of insurance policies will vary based on which state you live in. And in some states that have opted not to run their own exchanges or have had a historically tight eligibility for Medicaid and are not expanding it now, costs will definitely go up, double, even triple the cost from what I've read, which opponents seize on and supporters don't deny. For a consumer, this may not seem like cost cutting or an Affordable Care Act, depending on where you live, right?
Well, you have to understand that what costs, that's not a comparison to the premium, the cost of health insurance that you get if you're covered under your employer. Regular employer insurance.
This is for uninsured people who are on the private market.
The individual insurance market, which is mostly a dysfunctional market, right? It's dysfunctional because all the insurers do is try to cherry pick the healthy people, right? The whole game in the individual insurance market is to make sure you don't get stuck with anyone who's going to have a serious medical condition. So they impose all sorts of conditions on these plans to make sure they don't get anyone who's likely to get sick. So one benefit from that is if you're really healthy, if you've got a really clean record, then you can get relatively low-cost insurance because the insurance pool has been cleaned out of anyone who's likely to get sick. So once you add people who have a regular chance, an average or even above average chance of getting sick, then the character of the pool has to change, and then the average premium has to rise. But the kinds of people who are going to see their rates rise are the very small number of people who are very healthy and are able to benefit from the current situation.
And New York, by the way, was one of the few states that already would not deny sick people based on pre-existing conditions, or even that wouldn't charge people on the individual market higher rates for being older, which Obamacare allows. And so the rates got so high for young people because they were subsidizing the old people so much in New York and the sicker people that the young, healthy people were kind of priced out of the market because they didn't find it in their interest.
That's exactly right. In New York's and under the new system, New York's rates are coming down significantly for that reason, because then you're going to have young people coming in, or so the insurers believe. So the prices are going to fall in New York.
Now, you point out in your New York Magazine article that conservatives are perfectly comfortable being 100% confident that Obamacare will fail, while the supporters of it, like Ezra Klein and others, are more cautious and reasonable, you might say, in their praise, not comfortable arguing that they are 100% certain that it will succeed. So do you think that's either a personality difference between Democrats and Republicans, a political strategy, or is it that Obamacare never really inspired many of those liberals who maybe wanted single payer or something more elegant than this and who are only lukewarm defenders in the first place?
It's some of number one and some of number three. It's some of a personality difference between Democrats and Republicans. It's some of the fact that there was always an atmosphere of disappointment and settling and compromise around this for a lot of liberals who wanted something, a much more liberal plan. But I think it's also something else. I think it also represents a kind of structural difference between conservative movement writing in sort of agitprop and the intellectual style among liberal analysis. And I drew a comparison to what you saw during the election. During the presidential election, you had conservatives and Republicans were very, very confident that Mitt Romney was going to win, that the polls were skewed, or that the kind of analysis you saw in 538, Nate Silver, was kind of a joke and it was slanted. And the liberal analysis was much more cautious. It was really trying to take these conservatives' methodological criticisms very seriously, and they were constantly hedging and saying, we don't know, and if this is true, and et cetera, et cetera. And I think you see that same kind of asymmetry between the way liberals and conservatives are approaching the health care law.
So one more thing, right. And we're almost out of time. But Republicans are using the language of protecting American families from Obamacare. And Obamacare is still, on balance, a negative in the polls. And yet there are things that they say, and I wish I had a piece of tape to back this up. I don't, but I keep hearing it. There are things that they say that suggest that one of the things they're really afraid of is that people are going to like it once it's actually implemented.
Well, they've certainly said that. They certainly said once people start getting the benefits, you can't stop it. And that's a way of saying that people who are enjoying the benefits of the law are going to support it. And that's another way of saying that the uninsured have always been a very disorganized constituency with very little political voice, not aware of their situation, not aware of how policy affects them. And so Congress has usually ignored them. But once they're within the system, once they're actually benefiting from a government program, then making them uninsured again is going to be a very, very hard thing for the right to do. So that's behind this underlying sense of urgency. We've got to stop this law right now before it starts.
Jonathan Chait, who's been writing about Obamacare and the battle to stop it and maybe even shut down the government over it in New York Magazine. Jonathan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.